Our speaker today is Dr. Terry Thrower. Terry holds a PhD in Disability Studies from the University of Illinois. She has the bachelor's and master's degrees in rehabilitation counseling and has lived over 50 years with disability and chronic illness. At age 3, she was diagnosed with juvenile idiopathic arthritis, which is the root cause of most of her health disability issues. Terry has had over 40 major surgeries. That's 40, 4-0. Has had all major joints in her lower body replaced with prosthetics, and at age 32, lost most of her usable vision to glaucoma. In 2016, suffering from cervical spondylolisthesis, which is neck vertebrae collapse, and a permanently injured spinal cord, Terry underwent occipital cervical fusion to prevent total paralysis. Terry and her husband, that would be me, currently live in the North Georgia mountains, where we are rebuilding our lives focused on appreciating the beauty, wonder, and interdependence of everything. Terry's talk this morning will be Understanding Ableism. And you can understand my care. If she falls and breaks, man, it's all over.
Thank you, honey, for that assistance and for a beautiful service. And thank you all for being here today. This is something that's really near and dear to my heart. And it's one of those things that as McKenna was telling us, we all want to be treated equally. We all want to be treated fairly no matter what. So we've begun to, as a society, as a culture, and as Unitarian Universalists, understand things like sexism. That it sets up a binary where being male is preferred over being female. And in recent times, we have begun to challenge those assumptions through the hashtag MeToo movement. Likewise with racism. We have set up a binary that white people are preferred and privileged over people of color. And we've begun to challenge that through Black Lives Matter, for example. So similarly, ageism is one of those binaries as well. And we've begun to challenge the idea that youth are preferred over people who are over 50 with a lesser known, I think lesser known, hashtag disrupt aging begun by AARP. But one of the things that I see constantly, and as a disabled person, it drives me crazy, just put it out there, is that we're not talking about ableism. We're not talking about the privileged binary of able-bodiedness over impairment. And there are groups, of course, that are trying to fight that, but it's not discussed. When you start talking about these things, anti-Semitism, ageism, heterosexism, all of these oppressions that have been created, and these false binaries that have been set up, we don't see disability, and that's what I'm here to talk about today, as something we need to be aware of. Because once you start to become aware of these isms, you see that they are interconnected. And through that interconnection, you can start to begin to see hierarchies that are formed through privilege. I'm sorry, I'm trying to keep the microphone in the same spot. Everybody can hear me?
Yeah.
So privilege and these binaries start to, as I said, set up these interconnected hierarchies. Because what happens, I think, especially in, let's start with ability privilege for one, is that it's a taken for granted kind of thing. We tend not to be aware of the privileges that we have, and they can be multiple. We could also have multiple oppressions at the same time. So we look at the world through that, we tend to look at the world through that privilege. And until we start to challenge those assumptions and become aware of the different assumptions, we can't begin to challenge them. They remain sort of internalized. They remain sort of taken for granted attitudes and perspectives that we carry with us. And that's why it's important to start to become aware of privilege. I think talking about privilege can be an uncomfortable conversation, but it shouldn't be. It's not about making anyone feel bad or feel guilty or feel ashamed. It's an opportunity for us to learn and be more responsible toward creating a just and inclusive society for everyone. So, what is ableism? Like I said, it's just basically that discrimination or favor towards one group, the able-bodied, over another group. And it plays out in different ways. So, for example, there are, in this country, about 58 million people with disabilities, almost 20% of the population. And I was talking with Ed Wolpert this morning about, he understood that because of the great economy that we have right now, people with disabilities have a lower unemployment rate than they usually do. But I've been watching this for a while, and it tends to run very high. So currently, the unemployment rate for people with disabilities is about 9.2% in the nation. But for blind people, if you just take that group, 13.1%. unemployment rate. And of course, these things fluctuate, and it's based on who's out in the workforce or trying to look for a job, as we know. Ableism, like these other oppressive isms, sexism, racism, etc. And I'm going to leave some out, and I apologize because I don't mean to silence anyone. Like Patrick, I agree that silence, like the ACT UP people said, silence can be death. And we need to talk about these things. Where was I going with that?
Comparing it to sexism. We need to talk about
this.
Right. Sorry, lost my place. Okay, so these things play out, these isms play out in different ways. And I think we started to understand how sexism plays out because of the publicity that the hashtag MeToo movement has been getting. We're starting to understand how it plays out because of Black Lives Matter. And since we don't have something similar for disability, I want to spend some time bringing that out a little bit. There are things called, you're probably aware of this, microaggressions and macroaggressions. We have the Americans with Disabilities Act in this country to protect people with disabilities who meet that definition from macroaggressions, basically. Discrimination from employment, access to public spaces, you know, the legalities of getting around and participating in a world and having opportunities if you have disability. So that's great. Those are obvious ones. And sometimes they're not so obvious. So macroaggressions can also be things like people who just zip into a handicapped parking space at a store, and yeah, I use handicapper, that's how I like to call them, but disabled parking space at a store just for a second. And even if they don't park in the space, if they just park on the blue lines, leaving the space open, that becomes a situation where then the space is no longer usable. So if you're using a wheelchair or you just need that extra space to get out of your car, you don't have it anymore. Other things like restrooms, having ramps built in, you know, for stairs. But it comes out like, Greg and I are looking for a house, and it's really tough to find a house that's all on one level with a ramp into it. As many of y'all probably know, everything is on multiple levels, or a lot of things are on multiple levels. And even if it's on one level, you have, you know, 5 or 8 or 10 stairs to get up to it because of the hilly situation that we live in the mountains. But microaggressions are less overt. They're less of these omissions, these legalities. They're more insidious. They tend to be things that happen interpersonally, things that happen intentionally or unintentionally. Just as a result of that mindset that we carry with us of our own privilege. For example, I went to the doctor Wednesday, and Greg, of course, was there to be my sighted guide, and he drove me, and he was with me, and he was guiding me in to my appointment. The nurse was new, the doctor was new, and she wanted me to go ahead, and he told her, she's blind, you lead. So she did, and she led us to the scale, and then she said to Greg, tell her to step up on the scale. And I said, she will, because I couldn't resist. But after that, she was talking to me. But this is not an unusual situation. Other things that I notice is, and this is a slight little pet peeve of mine, so public restrooms that are accessible, the accessible stalls, like in a ladies' room where there are multiple stalls, and usually there's one big one, you know, with the grab bars and the higher seats and all that wonderful stuff. I need that because I have trouble getting on and off, you know, sometimes. It's safer. It's safer for some of us. And when I was using Guava as my guide dog, it had enough room for her to get in there. But there have been many, many times where I walk into a restroom like that, especially in a big city, and all the other stalls are empty, and the one handicap, I'm using it again, stall was busy, and I'm waiting. And the person who comes out doesn't look obviously disabled. And then I have to check my own attitude, because it's like, I don't know what that person's needs are. I can't even tell by looking at her whether or not she really needed it. She may have, but that's one of those things that can be a microaggression. And then I'm retaliating, as you see, in these ways, because I too carry my own internalized sense of ableism that says you need to be more disabled to use that stall. You know, I'm sort of policing her. And this is how it can play out. There was another example I wanted to bring up. So of a microaggression, my sister is a sign language interpreter for the deaf. So she's steeped in deaf culture. She's very aware of it. And her fiance, who's a very nice guy, part of the family now, he was talking to us one day, and he looked at me and said that, he said, "Terry, I just see you for you. I don't see your blindness." And I don't know about the rest of you, but that's kind of like saying, I don't see that you're gay. I don't see that you're a female. I don't see the experiences, the real diversity that is who you are. And I think that's what starts to happen with these isms, is we let go of valuing the diversity, because ableism, like all these other isms, is about assigning a greater value to certain groups than it is to others. And what happens with that is it leads to a sense that we're taking this stuff on in ourselves. Like I just referred to, internalized ableism is a form of internalized oppression. I have spent a lot of time in my life. A part of it is the surgeries, all of the surgeries that I had, trying to become more able-bodied, trying to pass for normal, trying to be accepted in a world that I understood on a deep level didn't. And I think when we all share some of these different privileges and devaluations, we understand that. And so that's why I think it's important to bring disability into the conversation. So internalized ableism is so harmful, because you're carrying around this perspective that says you're not right as you are. And so I try to correct for that. You know, if I get these new knees, I'll be normal. I'll be better. People will accept me. And yet, ableism is so ingrained We can spot somebody who's passing, usually, or not passing well. And I never did, because I didn't get perfect knees. I didn't get a perfect non-disabled body, even with all of the medical interventions that I went through. And so the other thing that tends to happen in disability is this idea that we're trying to overcome. Now, y'all have heard of overcoming, but in disability, it's trying to act as if you are able-bodied, to lessen the harm that you feel, or the, not harm, but just to lessen the impact of your disability on others, so that they don't feel you are a burden, because you tend to walk around with this idea that you're the burden. There's a piece of a poem from Lynn Manning, who is a blind poem, and he's African American, and it begins, it's called The Magic Wand, and it begins with, "Quick change artist extraordinaire, I flip open my white cane and go from black man to blind man with a flick of my wrist." And so within the poem, he says, he goes from white man's burden to every man's burden in the blink of an eye. So that's what's happening. It's sort of the internalization is part of that. You're lessening the burden to you. I have been worried to talk about this, you know, because it's like I will burden you with a discussion that you're not really interested in, that will make you uncomfortable, and I don't want to make you uncomfortable about disability. I want to start talking about it in the world, and I want us to start talking about it as Unitarian Universalists. I think that as long as we're talking about these different binaries and these different oppressive systems and these different hierarchies, and we start to become aware, we're going to break them down. We're going to change the world. And that's what gets me so excited. And I got really, really, really excited at... I couldn't contain myself, right, Casey? At the last Atlanta Leadership Exchange, where we had a brief introduction to white supremacy culture. We're steeped in it. We are swimming in white supremacy culture. And when they just started to describe it, this was before I even read the worksheet, because it wasn't accessible to me. But they started to describe one of the tenets of it is a sense of perfectionism. I was like, whoa, wait a minute, that's ableism too. That's sexism too. You know, that they are all there under white supremacy culture. I was just beside myself, because you can see that this idea that in white supremacy culture, if we value perfectionism, then if you're not a certain way, and the perfect is the white male, able-bodied, straight, you know, wealthy, middle class, I mean, I could go on and on, then you're wrong. And that it's what it said. There's a right and a wrong. And there's either or thinking. And it's like, we create these standards of beauty, of being, of bodies, of ways to behave, of who to love. of how to love God. And it doesn't get us anywhere. It just divides us further. So right. So I'm not sure how aware y'all are of what the UUA is doing about disability issues and even ableism. This is really, this is the first version of a talk, a webinar that I'm giving at the end of February for the UUA, basically. But it's being presented by Equal Access, that's E-Q-U-U-A-L, Access, and the AIM Ministry. And AIM stands for Access and Inclusion Ministry. And what that is a certification process for congregations that would like to become accessible and inclusive congregations. And so if you're interested, I'll send around that information so we can put it in the newsletter. But Equal Access in particular is trying to make congregations and the UUA more aware of disability alongside, you know, because we've already been talking as UUs about Black Lives Matter and welcoming congregations. And this is another addition to that welcome and that plan for social justice and increasing the diversity of our who we are and how we are in the world, how we're changing the world through the social justice work and the church work that we do as a faith. So I'm going to open it up to discussion. And I can't see hands, so just...
Terry?
Yeah.
This is Colleen. I would love to say something.
We have a moderator here.
Can I switch microphones with you? I'm going to bring you into your one.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll put this out to the people speaking so everyone can hear them.
Thank you. Terry, I want you to know that I think I speak for everybody here, that nobody feels burdened by you speaking to us about this issue. I feel honored that you would trust us with talking about something that's so close to your heart. And not only do I not feel burdened by having this topic be part of our discussion, I know personally, I would love for you, if you feel comfortable with this, checking in with us maybe quarterly or as often as necessary as a congregation to help us know that we're being responsive to not only what your needs are personally, but what you think others could need from us as well, and be a voice for us to help us know that information. And I hope that we are doing a good job of making things accessible and easy, but if we're not, I hope you know that you can share that with us.
Oh, absolutely, Colleen. Absolutely. I think that the church is doing their absolute best. And, you know, my talk today was not about that. I would love to keep the conversation going about these issues, because I'm here not just for myself, but I'm here for other disabled people that might show up, for people like Gretchen, who showed up in her wheelchair today, you know, and for all of us who, whether we realize it or not, yet might have a temporary or a permanent injury. that affects our lives, and just as a social justice advocate. So thank you.
Thank you.
It's also one of the reasons we use this microphone.
Yes, so much better than this one.
I had an incident happen when I was in eighth grade, and we had I considered him a friend. His name was Paul. He had cerebral palsy, and he had he walked with the crutches that were more like the arm braces.
Yes.
I was always proud to be, considerate of others, if someone were behind me, I would hold the door open for them, regardless of whether they were male or female or whatever. Paul was behind me. We were going into the gym, and unthinkingly, like I would anybody else, I held the door for him. And he went into a rage and picked up a basketball and hit me upside the head, and I called them Wheelie Birds, And I was devastated, because I was treating him the way I treated everybody else. And, so I didn't realize at the time that I was doing something wrong in his eyes.
Yeah, I know, it just takes one rotten person, really.
I was 8th grade, so it kind of traumatized me a little bit as to how I needed to treat people with disabilities, on further into my adult years.
In eighth grade, you're not going to be aware of internalized ableism and the rage that came out from that, that he wanted to be treated like everybody else. So if you'd slammed the door on him instead of trying to help him, he wouldn't have gotten mad, I guess. But that's really unfortunate.
Yeah. I really just didn't know what to do about it.
But I think... Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, you can look back and see that you weren't demeaning him, of course, but he felt demeaned because of how he understood himself in the social situation.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Terry, this is Greg.
Hi, honey.
Terry and I talked about this, and it's rough in this binary setup, because there's a positive side of the ism and a negative side. There's a plus one on the ism scale, and there's a zero on the ism scale, right? And so what ends up happening is eventually that person on the zero scale starts to react that way. It's like we see in hashtag me too, right? That women are not comfortable anymore with taking a secondary role of being in the zero, and they're acting out, right? And it's because of this male supremacy dominance in the sexism with a positive one, right? That ends up putting them in a lower position, and they fight back. It's human nature, and so we're by having all of these isms, whichever one you start looking at it, and the ism indicates favoritism towards one group. If that's true, then somebody is in a secondary class. How do you deal with that? Because as soon as you establish that, you're establishing a war situation between the two cultures. And it's crazy. And women are reacting to being thought of as frail, little, less than, not strong, and they fight back. People with disabilities, it's the same thing, and they fight back. So it's the whole ism concept is just really, really negative and scary.
Here is Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
I want to endorse the comments that have been made so far, especially about how hard this is. for everybody to deal with ableism. For some reason, fighting sexism, racism, ageism, and a lot of other isms is clearer than this ableism issue is. And we are especially going to need your help, Terry, in effecting behavior change as a group. We need feedback. We need to understand how our behavior affects others in order to change it. Because we're in a position of, without feedback, it's as if we are bowling, but you can't see the pins fall. How long are you going to keep bowling if you can't see the pins fall? So you've got to help us. Please help us learn to see the pins fall.
That's a good point, Bruce. Thank you. And there is a lot of ambiguity with disability, I think more so. And especially, you know, Greg and I can attest to the fact that there's a lot of ambiguity in having chronic illness and not knowing what the future is going to hold as far as how my body's going to hold up, you know. But in fact, none of us know that. That's why it's harder, I think, to deal with. Plus, you can easily say in a lot of these isms that, well, I'm a man, not a woman. But in ability, in ableism, you know, I can say, well, I have the privilege that I can still walk. Not fast, but I do it. I have the privilege that I can still hear and speak and on and on. So my recommendation is that we just not be afraid to talk about it, you know, to ask questions. If y'all want to use me as the resident expert on this stuff, I'm happy to. And don't feel embarrassed about it, because I have taught disability studies classes where I got silence for the same reason, that it's hard to talk about. We feel like we have to be politically correct. We don't know the right words. I was using all kinds of words. You know, I use people with disabilities as much as I use disabled people, as much as I use handicapped. You know, I don't care. And I don't use differently able, but it doesn't bother me. You know, it's whatever language and whatever weird questions. You know, so yeah, this is good. Thanks, Bruce.
Hi, this is Helen.
Hey, Helen.
One thing I think is funny is if you live long enough, you're going to become somewhat disabled.
Amen.
Maybe really disabled. I substitute in high school, and kids who want to be nice say, oh, you only look like you're 30. And I'm like, oh, that's ridiculous. What are you, crazy? I said, if you want to be nice, say I look like I'm 65. You know, but this fear of insulting, this fear of being too personal, you start out feeling sorry and then you feel uncomfortable. You know, it's just us being stupid.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, Terry. This is Blenda.
Hi.
First of all, I want to thank you for intimate feelings of yours with us and for feeling that. And I want to talk about another group that's really stigmatized. People like me who have diagnoses of it's something that you frequently can't see. And in conversations with people about it, I had a 5-year career as a critic, raised children. You know, I had to fairly take my medication. I see my psychiatrist every 3 months and a fairly normal life. But I sometimes when I see that, you know, it's like, wow, I really hear me in the hospital. Also to cause me to monitor my behavior in social situations, because there's a fine line for me where I think I might be exposing myself as exhibiting crazy behavior, and I don't want to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Terry, this is it. I appreciate your comments. And I want to pick up on something you said earlier when you went to a doctor and you and the nurse were new to you and you were led to the scale and then the nurse says to you, the nurse says to your husband, you know, tell her to step on the scale. And I thought to myself, there's a certain etiquette in dealing with people who are disabled or differently abled. And you might think it's common sense, but I don't think it is. And I'm sure you've had the example when somebody finds out that you're blind, they raise their voice and shout at you. and you have to say, I'm not deaf, I'm blind. Pardon me, but there are certain ways of behaving toward people which, if you don't do it, you're considered insensitive. And I think a lot of it is just a question that people don't know. And I'm wondering, is there any organization that provides some guidelines for how to treat with people who are different from you in terms of ability? And if so, am I might be good to have on our wall with the other things that we believe in.
Oh, sure, good idea. I mean, there's lots of, you know, YouTube videos and blog posts and things, resources about disability etiquette, what to do if you meet a blind person, what not to do, tons of stuff online about microaggressions and ableism, in fact. But yeah, I mean, if when I send the links about equal access and AIM and my webinar, I can also include some resources like that, and y'all can figure out what you want to do with them.
I think that'd be helpful.
Yeah, cool.
Terry, when I was looking for slides for today, I found one that said, something about this, I forgot the name of the kid, but it's some kid learns about whole body listening, which sounds like a wonderful thing to listen with your ears, listen with your eyes, listen with your liver, I mean everything. And then right beside it, it had, now he learns about ableism, and it took every one of those things and said, like, when you say listen with your eyes, well, what does that mean to a blind person? When you say listen to your brain, what does that mean to a mentally challenged person? When you listen with your ears, what does that mean if someone's having trouble with hearing? It's a really interesting thing. Maybe I'll share that with everybody as well.
Yeah, and you can imagine the diversity that comes out of thinking that through when things are different for another person.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
Diane, what up? How you doing?
Hey, Diane.
As many of you know, I was in Washington last weekend for the Women's March, and it was my second Women's March. I wasn't able to go to the second one, but went to the first. And basically, it was a celebration of all women and what we can do. After we marched, we went back to Freedom Park and stood in the cold and listened to speakers. And the speakers mostly were organizers. So there were all these subsets of women. There's a difference between inclusion and exclusion. We were there for inclusion, for all women. And most of the women that spoke had some kind of subgroup that they represented. Like there were Hispanic women, there were Native American women, there were women parolees, women that had been in prison, and we were all there as one group. It wasn't so much what separated us, but what united us. And many of the speakers were very dynamic, and they would have us chant something that kind of represented their point of view. For instance, this coalition of black women said that feminism was not just for white women. that black women can be feminists too. I was very impressed by a young woman that spoke for the disabled. She was very small and in a wheelchair, and this was her third Women's March. And she said she came to the first one because there was no accommodation for the disabled. But it got better in the second one, and it got better in the third one, and they were able to make their presence known. And what she said to us, which really impressed me, she had us chant back at her, was nothing for us without us. I really,
nothing about us?
Should hear 20,000 people all at the same time saying nothing for us without us.
Nothing about us without us?
Yes.
Is that it?
Yes, yeah. Nothing about us without us. Yeah. Right.
Thank you all very much.